Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! LeBron James with no regard for human life.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang! Iverson against Gill. The crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up, what up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick Engvall. Tonight, I'm with my guy, Mike Guillory. What's going on, man? You ready to talk some sneakers?
Yeah, man. Just ready to get going. Got a couple cool things I think we found today, and I hope everybody enjoys listening to it.
Yeah, me too, man. So before we get into that, just to get the business out of the way, we did get a couple of reviews last week, so thank you for the reviews. We want to highlight RIP Lil Saint. He left us a two-word review titled Flames and Fire. We appreciate the feedback. Five stars on iTunes. And if you guys have time to leave us a review on iTunes, it would be greatly appreciated. It's the best way for us to kind of expand and continue to grow the audience and the community here around this podcast. So we also are dropping a separate episode on Patreon, typically once a week. We're trying to do that at least. We do have a new one over there today for you guys. So if you want to listen to another episode that we're talking, we go in depth on the Jordan 34 on that episode on our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/sneakerhistory. Now that that's out of the way, we got to talk about the Jordan 34 again a little bit, but we also got Kobe 5s potentially coming back, a new winterized Air Jordan 4, and this crazy story about a kid that got a free pair of Travis Scott's and supposedly sold them for $200,000, but we'll get into that. So what do you think about the Jordan 34, Mike? What's your first impression?
Man, I like it. But I've always liked seeing that new flagship model. I know everyone was expecting it to, just like the last couple models, taken a lot of cues from its 30-year predecessor, this one being the Jordan 4. Something about this shoe, it looks fast. It looks like performance. Like if you want to put the word, a picture for the word performance, this looks like it to me. It seems like it takes some of those frills out of there. Gives us, from what it looks like, from the pictures, look like a normal lacing system again. Gives us some pretty solid ventilation of the shoe. Some looks like really performance-driven materials. If I'm not mistaken, is Zoom bags in here. And from looking at a Nightwing's review, that forefront Zoom bag is such a big Zoom bag. Those two like plastic pieces are actually encased in a Zoom bag. So when you step on it, it actually flexes outside. So those, like I said, those two pieces can actually contain it. So, man, I know it's not a 1 through 15 model. It's not a classic, but for someone who, like me, who likes to play ball, I like to play in the new, like, what's the new technology you can give me to make me play a little bit better? Not saying it's going to help me much, but it is, it's cool to see it, man. And I mean, I see some cues from a couple different models here. What was that? The Jordan 2009 that had like the little triangle diamond emblem right on the like where your ankle is. Of course, you see the you see the cues from the Jordan 4 with the Nike Air in the back with the flight on the tongue. I mean, there's a couple different things here. You got the writing underneath the heel and that little different color tab that reminds me of the Jordan 15. I mean, this is just a clean shoe, man. I mean, again, you have to remember, Jordans were based to be performance shoes. So 1 through 15, yes, you don't plan them now typically, or as much as to say. But when those came out, those were meant to be performance shoes, and they're keeping the lineage alive. They're not making retros for the street per se. This is for the court. This is to get the best performance out of their Jordan athletes, the best performance out of the schools that they sponsor, the kid trying to be the next big thing. This is the tool they're giving them, and I think it's pretty solid.
I agree. I think it's a beautiful shoe to me. I think aesthetically it's up there in towards the top for me as far as the last, like, I'd say, 10 years or mm-hmm. I like that they are focusing on the technology. I think that's important. I think that the last few years where they're trying to, I think they put too much effort into trying to bring in the storyline of the 2 or the 3 or whatever into the 32, 33. And this seems more like they're back to focusing on the technology and the technology advancing. Mm-hmm. So Zoom Air, essentially, like, this is like the biggest Zoom Air bag that's ever been in a Jordan. From what I've read, at least in the front, the heel is a kind of a standard size, but the 4 foot Zoom, is massive, So that, along with, like, they're calling it what, like, the Eclipse plate. Mm-hmm. So for me, the Jordan 28 is kind of the pinnacle of, like, I don't know, maybe the 29 is a little bit better to play in, but the 28 is the first time I stepped into a Jordan shoe and it felt crazy to me. Like, it felt different before you even did anything. It just felt like, whoa, this is nuts. And that was like flight plate technology. So that essentially, like, separated the Zoom from, better separated the Zoom cushioning from the rest of the midsole. And I think that this kind of, they've essentially, like, progressed to get to this Eclipse plate that takes the value that the flight plate, started whatever that was 6 years ago. And, making it lighter and essentially upping the size of the cushioning. So to me, this is like exactly what you said. Like, you want to play in this shoe. This is the coolest, the pinnacle of basketball shoes, in a sense, where, everybody has their own pinnacle basketball shoe in their mind. And then the brands all, align with, like, this is what we consider our top of the line, blah, blah, blah. But to me, the Jordan signature model is always kind of the one that I look at as, like, this is either the future of technology or a stepping stone to the future of technology and basketball shoes. So I think that they're, just from that standpoint, they're on the right track, and this is a really appealing shoe to me. Aesthetically, I think it looks like amazing. So I'm going to be all about trying mm-hmm. to get a pair. One thing that a guy that follows the sneaker history accounts, Todd Cravanche, made a point, like, how do you justify this being a $180 shoe and retro products being $220, $230, $250, whatever it is now? That to me is a really interesting question, because it used to be the Jordan signature model was the most expensive shoe on the wall at Foot Locker. And now that doesn't seem to be a priority for Jordan brand. So, but then if you're paying for a brand new technology, you would think that it's more expensive than retro product that's been around for 30 years that is really just rehashed old stuff. So I don't know. That's a kind of interesting thought. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that is a super interesting thought. And before I actually answer that question, I just want to echo you on the Jordan 29, because that was the first Jordan, outside of, again, like the 1 through 15, like in this new, like, real, like, hardcore performance models that I paid full price for at $200. And I, one of the shoes, we talk about wearing them to the ground, I played ball in those things till I could feel the ground on the sole of my feet, because that was the most comfortable and most, like, responsive basketball shoe I've ever used. So if this has any resemblance to that, to going back to, hey, we were straight performers, not trying to tell a story, I'm all about it. And I'm right with you. I'm going to try to get a pair. But to go back to your question in regards to the pricing, I think this is just, this is pure just like, hey, we know that, you know, we can get it, we can sell it for this. Like Jordan is a business. They know what people want. And I mean, I think it's pretty smart. They're serious ball players or serious sneaker enthusiasts who like to look at technology. They're going to buy this shoe for $175. But they know that 90% of the community, like they knew that when they unveiled this, that I don't want to say 90, that's probably too high of a number, but a big majority of the community is going to be like, oh, that's trash. If it's not 1 through 15, we don't want to talk about it. Or 1 through 14, we don't want to talk about it. So they're going to be like, cool, thank you for telling us. We're going to charge you $220 for the stuff that keeps coming out. We're not adding any more technology while, you know, and we can charge you that much and recoup all that money for the new technology that we're selling this one a little cheaper for. And then I've heard rumors that these new the Jordan 1s are coming out with next year or into this year, the new beginnings, like with the original cut of the, you know, breads that are coming out, and then the Chicago's are going to be $190 for a Jordan 1 now.
Damn.
Insanity. I love Jordan 1s, but that's getting to a point of like, I'm going to start buying mids exclusively if they're going to be $190 for an OG cut.
That's crazy. I think 200 is probably like the most I'd be willing to pay for a brand new like performance basketball shoe. It's rare that I pay more than 200 even for retros. You know, with the occasional like, you know, Black Cement 3, Infrared 6s, you know, maybe my top five favorite retros of all time, I'm willing to pay the 220 or whatever, you know, retail is. But I think that this is really interesting to make it more competitive, because that's the one thing that I think was the downside to the Jordan line for so long for a lot of people. If you're not into sneakers and you're not buying it, you know, because let's be honest, I'm not buying this shoe to play in it all the time. I'm going to play in it, you know, a half dozen times, and then I'm going to be playing in other shoes. And even then it's like, you know, I'm not the target audience for this, because I'm not, you know, ball is life out on the court every day. I have a life, unfortunately, that I've got to, you know, maintain, so I can't go play every single day. But yeah, I think that the interesting thing about the price kind of coming down a little bit is that it puts it in line to compete with even like other Nikes, right? You could potentially, you know, compare this to the LeBron line. You can compare this to, you know, I don't know. It's just really fascinating, because it makes it a more viable option for a lot of people that are buying basketball shoes. Now, I say that knowing that, you know, the Don issue one with, you know, Donovan Mitchell, like that shoe and the Giannis shoe, the Freak one from Nike, are, you know, what, $100 or less. So to me, there's a trend in basketball shoes to lower the price, because the trend of basketball shoes has fallen off, you know, largely due to, you know, retros and off-whites and Yeezys and all the other like lifestyle stuff that's taken money out of that category. So it's the natural kind of way for the brands to kind of recoup some of that energy for the category. But I'll be really curious to see how this sells, especially considering the next shoe we want to talk about, the Kobe 5, is supposedly coming back in a Protro version. So that's a pretty damn good option to be hooping it. So depending on what they do with it. But yeah, you found this one, so I'll let you talk a little about it.
Yeah, so going through Nice Kicks, you know, Robbie couldn't make it with us tonight, but he actually had this on his store. If you go check him out on Instagram earlier today, but it looks like they pretty much spread from Nike, just kind of laying out their dates of what they're going to be releasing for, you know, fall, winter 19. And, you know, lo and behold, we saw a picture of the Kobe 5 Protro Chaos, which is supposed to be the first Protro version of the Kobe 5 coming out. And if all holds true, it's going to come out just about exactly, actually, 10 years from the original Christmas Day drop in 2009. I mean, that's pretty solid. And not only is this one of the best colorways of the Kobe 5, but this is Nike's chance to kind of make up for the kind of, I don't know, what you call it, gaffe, or I don't know, just a pretty much the uproar regarding the calling the Kobe 4 Protro. And I think what they said, they upgraded the foam, but it still hits you for $175 when the shoe actually originally retailed for $140 back in 2008, 2009. So I'm excited for it. I can tell you this, that if this is true, I shall be buying myself a Christmas present on December 26th off whatever app I can get my hands on, because I think it'd be pretty easy to get, because unless it is an undefeated Kobe, they're going to sit, but that's okay. True Kobe fans, true Kobe sneaker fans will have their chance at one of the best Kobes to grace the hardwood. What do you think about it, Nick? You about this one?
I mean, I think that colorway is super dope. So if I have the opportunity to get it, I'll probably get it. More for me, like the Kobe stuff is more nostalgia than performance at this point. But
see what they do.
There's a few Protros that I've picked up just because I feel like they're important, or, you know, colors that I really liked that I didn't get the first time around. So Chaos is definitely one of them. If it indeed does come out, I mean, I think the timing, the 10-year anniversary, all that stuff is just well played by Nike. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see what they do with it. I think that it's the future of a lot of this stuff, in my opinion, right? Because you look at how many times they've tried to recreate the Air Force One, how many times Adidas has tried to recreate the Superstar, the Stan Smith, or Converse doing the Chuck Taylor. Like, all these brands have to learn how to update their classic styles or most popular styles over their history in ways that can make them more appealing the second time around. Because if you don't, you end up with the same kind of, you know, like ZX line from Adidas or Air Max from Nike, where it's only a handful of the really high energy colorways that really do well. The rest of them, you know, end up pretty heavily discounted. So I'm excited to see what this does. And, you know, as long as they're continuing to push like Protro type product, I think it's good for everybody, because it brings like the new technology into kind of that classic nostalgic shoes. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, as long as they're keeping the aesthetic tasteful.
Yeah, I agree, man. I just, like I said, Kobe is one of my favorite, will always be one of my favorite players, even though he would frequently destroy my Houston Rockets. It's just, I mean, just the way he played the game has always been just a favorite of mine, something I always admired from afar. But you know what's crazy? So I had a discussion with some guys at one of our local sneaker shops here, their consignment store. And I was just talking to them about some of the product they take in, because the owner has a lot of Kobe's in his collections. And I was just kind of asking them, what do they typically get in their store? And do they take any Nike basketball, which of course is kind of a thing. But I asked them about the Kobe, since they had, you know, a few pretty rare ones. I think these are going to sit, because just from hearing this from just one, like, a pretty prominent store in Houston, they won't take any Kobe that's not an undefeated. So I don't know if just the popularity of Kobe's worn off. Maybe these now people don't think these are wearable casually as, you know, as it did back a few, 10 years ago. But I don't know, man, but I just feel like these are such a, just a great looking shoe. The Kobe 5 is, I mean, one of my top three Kobe models, and maybe like top 10 silhouettes, I think, ever. And I don't know, man, I just feel like this is such a sweet release, and I can't wait to get my hands on a pair. Even if I don't get lucky and these do sell out, I'm sure they're going to have a bunch of great ones to follow.
Yeah. I mean, if they make one, they got to make more. But, you know, to your point about the consignment store you were talking to, you know, this is like the inherent problem with consignment stores. And I'm going to have my like old man screams at clouds moment right now. I have like nothing against consignment stores. I actually think they're dope. I've bought plenty of shoes from consignment stores because honestly, like, it's an easier way for me to find old stuff than, you know, waiting for it to pop up on eBay. So I applaud the people that are doing this stuff, and I love the vintage stuff anyway. And like, even, you know, we've talked about in previous episodes, like, it's just something that I'm into. But from a business perspective, it is very hard for me to understand the like thought process behind a lot of these consignment stores and resale shops, because the reason why business, why, you know, like Nike has official partners like a Foot Locker or a, you know, Kith or, you know, Concepts or Undefeated or whoever else you want to pick, right, is because they're willing to sell to those people at a wholesale price. And that brings the cost of that product way down, because Nike only really needs to sell shoes probably marked up, you know, 50% or whatever. Now, we all look at this and we see, oh, it didn't sell out, so it's not popular. Nike must be falling off. The only thing that Nike really cares about is the perception that they're not the cool brand. Mm-hmm. If they sell 50,000 pairs of Kobe 5s to retailers at $50 a pop, they're still going to make a ton of money off these shoes. The only people that aren't going to make a ton of money when they do this and they make a ton of shoes, like they've done with the Kobe 1 and the Kobe 4 Protros, with the exception of the Undefeateds, obviously. The consignment stores and the resellers are the ones that end up not doing well, because they can't sell the cool factor of the shoe when it sits on the shelves at a traditional retailer. And to me, this is where I just feel like there's way too much gray area between a retailer and a consignment or a reseller. And I don't think that they have to necessarily be 100% separate, but it definitely seems to raise an issue for the resale shops and the consignment stores if they see a release like this and already know that they can't resell it. That means that they're continually having to almost like reduce the number of products that they're willing to take in. It only works like that on the retail side when, you know, you've got to pick and choose between what brands are coming in and what product lines from those brands, because retailers got to make this, you know, like your traditional retailer has got to just make sure that there's always product coming in. There's always product going out. The stores are full. You know, the walls are full and everybody's, you know, moving, right? Where consignment, I feel like you could have a consignment store and put up 20 pairs of Off-White ones or Travis Scott Air Force ones, and you'll get enough people in that don't really care that that's the only thing you have, because those are the things that are going to appeal to a mass audience right now. So this is going to be really interesting. I think that, you know, I'd be interested to hear, you know, how the store the guys at the store you're talking to kind of address these things, because rather than just saying, no, we won't take that shoe, like there's, you know, from a business perspective, that's how the market's moving. You got to be able to adapt and try to figure out ways to bring in other shoes to fill that void, because, you know, to me, being in business is selling more than what's just hot. It's selling, you know, to a lot of different people and a wide variety of people. So I'll be curious to see how this kind of thing, you know, how Nike plays it on one side with the limited availability and if they do make it limited, and also how the consignment stores and the resale shops, you know, have to deal with all these new Kobes on the market that may or may not have a customer.
Yeah. Nah, man, I'm right there with you, because I mean, people like you and I and Robbie, we're not just looking for Yeezys or, you know, Jordan 11s or Off-Whites. We are literally like, I've been scouring for like previous LeBron models, previous Kobe models. Like that's been like my whole like mindset lately. I've given up on looking like anything new, because I was like, man, I just want to go back and find these old basketball shoes that I really like. And I mean, that's where places like GOAT are killing it for me right now, because I can find these bad boys in, you know, pre-owned fashion that I can't go to a consignment store here and find, because the only thing they're selling me is a Jordan 1, a Jordan 11, a Yeezy, pick a number, an Off-White. So I've had to basically just depend on the, you know, internet now to help me find these things. And you're right. I think a lot of these stores are missing out on some great sales, because they have to realize that there's some people out there who still like love and respect Nike basketball shoes, and there's a market for it, man. And you may not be selling them for, you know, upwards of a grand, but you can make a pretty successful living with a store if you're selling them like everything.
Yeah, I agree, man. Speaking of everything, or speaking of things that we will probably lose some fans over, because I know you and I are both into this shoe, the Air Jordan 4 winterized.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Man, so first off, before we even start, I hope that everyone who I've seen bashing this sneaker on Twitter and calling me silly for liking it, I hope you keep that same energy come whatever day these release, because these are awesome. I mean, from the color combination to just like the changing up of like the mesh on the side panels, it's just a cool shoe. And I mean, just so happens it does have the same reminiscent color combination of a particular Eminem 4, but that's just not even it. Like, this Jordan 4 looks like it's just, I don't know if the whole upper suede, but whatever it is, or just like a rougher leather, but it is just a beautiful looking shoe. And I don't care if it's winterized, I'll still wear that bad boy in May in Texas weather, and we'll make it happen.
Yeah, I think it's dope. I mean, the colorway, obviously, you know, people are saying it looks like the M&Ms, but regardless of that, I mean, I just think the colorway is dope. So, I didn't get to see, December 2nd was a release date, but again, like $200 retail. I mean, it looks like they've added a little bit of a kind of like a fleece liner of sorts. So that'll be kind of dope. I mean, they take away like the traditional mesh and put in like more of a thicker, you know,
it's like leather cut.
Yeah, presumably like, you know, leather or synthetic leather. So, I have no complaints. I think it looks super dope. I think even if it was a regular retro, this would be a colorway that I'd be into. And, you know, hopefully it goes on sale and I get it for a decent price.
Shoot. Yeah, man. Because everyone talks about, you know, I want the shoe to look like quality. And this is me making judgment by just the pictures. But if you look at the pictures, you can see that the leather, it looks soft. You can kind of see like the imperfections in the leather, which is typically on a real leather upper as opposed to a synthetic, because synthetic is always going to be perfectly smooth. But it looks like this is like a real leather cut. Just look, like I say, look at the discoloration and the imperfections. And like I say, and this is, people should be excited, because you know what? It's not a nylon Jordan 12 like they did last year that was their winterized shoe, or, you know, the Jordan 9 boot or anything like that. This is like they kept true to the sneaker, gave us some thicker materials for the colder months. And you can looks like, again, I don't know how warm it is when you put your foot in, but it has the capability by looks alone to be rocked in any other month of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the point. That's a great point, right? The Jordan 9, the Jordan 12, like both the 12 wasn't so bad because it didn't it didn't put like, a crazy, aggressive outsole on it. But the Jordan 9, winter or boot or whatever you want to call it, was just really odd. I get that you want to wear Jordans in the winter, but at the same time, like, nah, it's all good. You don't got to wear Jordans in the winter. If you need boots like that, you need to be buying like boots. So,
yeah.
But this one to me is, I think it'll be interesting to see how people, really react to it once it actually releases, because the color, regardless of it looking sort of similar to the M&Ms, I just think that like you said, they kept it, looking really, really similar to the original fours and make it something that's a little bit warmer that people can wear in the winter if that's what they want to do. And, I'll easily wear this year round. So, so moving on to our kind of craziest story we wanted to cover today, tonight, tomorrow, this morning, whenever you listen to this, thanks for listening. But, basically there was a video that went out, I want to say, a week or so ago, that was Travis Scott handing a pair of Air Force Ones to a kid in the audience. And it was at the Made in America, his Made in America. I don't remember where, but basically pair of Air Force Ones. We'd seen them on some of the blogs and like spy shot kind of things where you didn't know what the hell they were. But it turns out that he gave this pair of Air Force Ones, which I don't know if they're, going to come out eventually, but they're the ones with the kind of Carhartt strap thing on the back of them. And they look like they're made of like Carhartt material and multicolor, camo swoosh on one and gum bottoms. Like, they're super dope. So, turns out that Travis Scott handed this pair to a kid in the audience, and the kid obviously was found on social media. He posted up the video, then posted pictures of the shoes. And I came across this hyped.info's site, or hyped.info's on Instagram, which I don't know who they are, but a friend of mine sent me the link. And the link basically said that this kid was going to sell these Air Force Ones for $200,000. So, one, that would be crazy as hell. Two, I couldn't knock him for selling them. But, I also don't think I would sell them for $200,000. I mean, that sounds insane to actually vocalize that, but I don't know. What do you think about this one, Mike?
I mean, it's hard because, once you get them, people are going to come at you, everybody, normal people, celebrities, they know you have the only pair in existence at this point in time. They're going to come at you with some crazy dollar amounts, maybe some sneaker stores, crazy dollar amounts, because they know they can flip it for some more. So, as just a normal human being, like $100,000, $200,000 in your pocket for doing literally nothing but going to enjoy some music and getting lucky, it's like hitting a lottery, man. But at the same time, this kid clearly has a big, he's a huge fan of Travis Scott. So this could be worth more than any dollar amount to him that, Travis Scott picked him out of a crowd to go ahead and have those. I just think it's weird, though, because clearly the kid still has the shoes and these outlets saying he's going to sell them for this. Travis Scott told him to keep them. the kid clearly is keeping them. Like, why try to, like, who knows what the relationship the kid was going to have with Travis Scott, you know, just from that moment. Like, you brought up a good point, Nick, earlier, that this could set up a, like, relationship for life. Like, maybe he's going to get sent, you know, if he actually keeps him, he'll come in contact with him again. And Travis is like, cool, you actually kept him and didn't just cash me in. Here's something else for you. So it's nuts.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of interesting thing and what I would think about in this situation. So to kind of reiterate the story, essentially the kids get given these Travis Scott Air Force Ones. He posts pictures of them about a week ago. Travis commented and said, basically keep those shits. So then, like, these other sites, these other Instagram accounts were like speculating, like, I screenshot a post from this same account that said that they were being sold for $200,000. Now the account has a post that says, would you take 40,000? Would you take 100,000? And it made me think about, like, how much would you really take for it? You know, I am by no means wealthy, and like, that would be an insane amount of money for me to have. And, you know, as for anybody. So I think that I wouldn't knock taking the money for anybody like that, you know? But what I do think is really fascinating is you've seen this in, you know, in a smaller form through retailers, right? Like, let's say you go into a, you know, retailer and you buy whatever pair of shoes. Then, you know, 3 months later, they have a promo that says, hey, if you bought this from us, you get first access to this next hot shoe. Now, granted, that's just a pair of shoes and you're getting to buy it, whatever, but, you know, they're rewarding you for buying from them, essentially. And to me, if I was a crazy popular superstar artist of some kind, I would absolutely keep an eye on what happened. Or, you know, maybe I wouldn't have time, but I would have somebody keep an eye on these kind of things, because at the end of the day, Travis Scott could make this kid's career, make this kid's life in any way, you know, that we can't even imagine, right? But for him to, you know, kind of say to keep them, and then if this kid, you know, presumably keeps them for, let's say, 10 years. Now, my first thought was, if you look at like some of the early Kanye samples from, you know, Nike or whatever, those can go for crazy amounts of money. Like, I would love to know how much PJ Tucker paid for those Kobe ones, because there's people out there that will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for those shoes. We saw people paying hundreds of thousands for old shoes just a few months back or a month back at Sotheby's auctions. So these like cultural moments, I think, become much more valuable over time. Especially when, you know, if you think of like, this Travis Scott experience for this kid is not to this level, but if you think of the very first time Kanye wore the Nike Air Yeezy One, he wore like the black sample pair for the Grammy Awards in 2008 or 9 or whatever it was. And that shoe to me is exponentially more important than any other Nike Air Yeezy, because the moment was captured, you know, on video camera, all this stuff, right? People know that moment as like, this is Kanye's first big step into like mainstream footwear, right? Before that, he had done stuff with everybody, right? He had had, you know, Air Maxes with Nike, and had some shoes with Reebok, and had some shoes with Bape, and did his Louis Vuitton stuff. But like, this was the very first of the like huge, huge impact of Kanye on pop culture, and the shoes that, you know, helped him do that in a sense. So thinking about that, I don't think that I could sell a pair of shoes that I got from somebody that are a one-off design, at least perceived as a one-off design right now. Now it's different if you're like, you know, a basketball player hands you a pair of Hyperdunks, or, you know, Kevin Durant hands you a pair of PEs that you can't wear because they're size, you know, 17s or whatever he wears. There's all sorts of different like ways that I could see going about this. But when I saw this story, I basically thought to myself, what dollar amount is, you know, like, what is the dollar amount for people? Is it just like, cool, I just need to come up on some money and get the bag and, you know, I'll take 20 grand for this shoe? Because if this kid feels that way and takes 20 grand for it, you know that because it's a one of a kind and because it's Travis Scott and he's on fire right now, there's celebrities out there that'll pay 5-10 times that to get this pair of shoes. They might not pay it all the time, and it might be in a spur of the moment, you know, just gotta have it instance, the way that we all have that, like, you know, we all have those moments where we're like, damn, I just bought this shoe and I absolutely shouldn't have spent this money. Like, that's how it works.
Impulse buys.
Yeah, they're just you know, playing it on a more expensive scale. So I couldn't think of a dollar amount. And that sounds really weird, but if getting rid of the shoe takes away the possibility of having some sort of like actual contact, relationship, friendship, or potentially other, you know, collaboration type stuff with someone like Travis Scott or all the people that are surrounding him in the entertainment business or, you know, whatever. Like, I don't think I could let the shoes go for any amount of money. And that sounds crazy because obviously, like, I got to pay rent and that would pay my rent for a significant amount of time. But what do you think, Mike? Is there, you know, Travis sends you a pair of these, hands you a pair of these Air Force Ones at a show, and, you know, you walk out of the show and somebody offers you $100,000. Are you taking the $100,000? You're like, I mean, cause it's totally respectable to be like, $100,000. Cool. That'll pay for a couple of years of college for my kid. You know, like,
yeah. So you know what? That is a super good point, because I was more thinking it depends on who it is, because Travis Scott gives me those. This is no disrespect, no hate on Travis Scott. I think he makes great music. He's not one of my personal favorite artists, but I do enjoy his music. If Travis Scott gave me those, if someone offered me $100,000-$200,000, I'm probably selling them. But on the same token, if Pharrell gave me a pair of the NERD, like, Nike Dunks signed, I'm never getting rid of those a day in my life. But you're going to sit in a glass case and just, I'm going to look at them every day.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on who it is for you. Like, as a person, your personal favorites, your personal, like, you know, icons. And that would be for me. It's like, yeah, I respect Travis Scott, everything he does. He makes great music. He's making some freaking great shoes. But he's not on that, like, that totem pole of, like, great artists for me. Because, again, if Pharrell gave me those, you know, Dunks, Kanye gave me a pair of the, you know, the Bapestas sign, like, I'm not getting rid of those.
I think it is, it, you know, it does come down to that, like, how that person impacts you personally. And, you know, I just think of how you just never know. I think my general rule with anything like that would be to not take any money for it for a couple of years. Just in case, like, something happens, or, you know, the artist or whatever, the shoe becomes like a crazy popular shoe, or, you know, there's just so much potential, especially right now with this trend of shoes being art. That it would be really hard for me to let go of it, you know, at any level. If you threw in the, you know, the aspect of like how much you're into a person, or like how much that person impacts your, you know, life, you know, like, had I gotten shoes from, you know, Nipsey Hussle or someone like that, where I'm like an insane fan, I like, that changes it completely for me. It's like, no, they'd never leave ever, regardless of. And so it's just kind of an interesting thing. But we want to pass that question off to everybody that's listening too. Who would it be? What would the dollar amount be? Like if your favorite celebrity, athlete, whatever, let's just say Michael Jordan, Jordan hands you a pair of shoes that he wore back in the day. Is there a price point that you're willing to let it go for? And how do you justify it? And how do you like think through that logically? And, you know, or is it just give me the bag and I'm out of here, which is totally fair too. You know, like depending on the day of the week, I'm right there with you actually.
So. Yeah, man. Yeah. I think we all have those moments. It's just, man, it's a tough get, like, regardless. It's like, because there's so many different outliers that can go into this. That is such, it's almost like, dude, it's almost like gambling because you don't know what's going to happen. And so it's tough. I mean, even if I say I would sell the Travis Scott's just because I don't have as much of a personal connection with, I feel like, the other artists, it would still be like a pondering moment. It wouldn't be like, oh, I got them, sell them. It would definitely be sitting on them for a while, just kind of look at them and just wondering, like, what do I do with this? Like, do I just keep it? You know, it's definitely a tough pill to swallow, I think.
Yeah, definitely. But wrapping up, I wanted to shout out to everybody that picked up a shirt over the weekend. Woo! Definitely appreciate you guys buying the tees. We're going to get these sent out and then we'll have, you know, a new design. If you have any thoughts on what we should do next, definitely hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, DMs, or comments, whatever, however you want to reach out to us. We would love to have your feedback. And if you didn't buy a shirt and you just want to let us know why you didn't, or if you were just like, no, that's not my colorway, whatever. All the feedback is definitely appreciated. So let us know. And Mike, what shoes are on your radar this week?
Well, everyone's going to call me a complete and total hype beast for this, but there is a pair of Nike Blazers that are coming out. It's a Nike Blazer Mid Vintage. And they look black, but they have a teal snakeskin swoosh and the back heel accent, which is reminiscent of just a certain pair of super amazing SB Dunks, which is the only, like, two of the only sneakers I will ever say I like from Supreme. And these look very reminiscent of that, and I like them a lot. So that's definitely my pick.
Yeah, those are pretty dope. They actually, they also remind me of, like, Stussy did a snakeskin swoosh on, like, the, I think it's the All Court or something like that.
Yeah.
So very similar. Definitely, I'm going to be keeping my eye on these two. My pick is actually a little bit outside the box, I guess. So Pyer Moss does Reebok collabs.
Yeah.
They just released, like, the third season, the New York Fashion Week. The new shoe is super wild. It's got, like, a lace cover on it. I don't even know if it actually has laces, but it's chunky, kind of vintage Reebok vibes. And I'm definitely looking to try to get a pair. So that's my pick for the week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And if you want to keep up with us on social, at Sneaker History, my name is Nick Engvall, at Nick Engvall on all platforms, NickEngvall. And Mike, how can they find you?
Yeah, Mike Guillory. You guys, again, find me at sneakerhistory.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram under MadWatcher789. Guys, thanks so much for showing out for those T-shirts. I'm glad you liked them. Again, let us know what else you like to see us do, because this is definitely a dope experience for us.
Yeah, most definitely. And we appreciate you listening. We'll catch you next time. Peace.
See you.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I just want to thank you again for listening to this episode of the Sneaker History Podcast. Remember, you can save 15% on Shrine Co. bags with the code HISTORY15 at the website theshrine.co. THESHRINE.CO. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a review on iTunes. And if you want even more sneaker history content, join our Patreon page for exclusive episodes and merchandise. As always, thank you for the support, and we'll catch you next time. Peace. Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.